You're a pack of vultures at the feast. Knives out, beaks bloody.
Hey guys, welcome back to Spooky Tuesday, a weekly podcast where we're breaking down all of our favorite slashers, thrillers, monster movies, and black comedies on the new scariest day of the week. I'm Sydney Thompson.
I'm Monica Hay.
And I'm Chelsea Duff. And this week we are talking about a very special movie. It is, as you may recall, a Fifth Tuesday. If you don't know what a Fifth Tuesday is, you are behind on your Spooky Tuesday lore, frankly. But a Fifth Tuesday is the fifth Tuesday of the month. I mean, it kind of speaks for itself a little, but what it means is that we get a freebie, a bonus. We get to work outside of our, whatever Sydney says, horror movies, monster movies, black comedies, etc. What is it Sydney says? Sydney say them?
She just said it.
You weren't listening. But I forgot. Thrillers, monster movies, and black comedies on the new scariest day of the week.
On the new scariest day of the week, and when it's the fifth one of the month, it's for us to decide to do it as we will. And this week, we will do the movie Knives Out from 2015. It honestly lends itself pretty well to Spooky Tuesday, I think. It is a murder mystery. You know what I mean? It's just not a thriller or whatever.
It's a classic whodunit.
A classic whodunit.
Total classic.
Treading a lot of the same ground as movies like Clue, which we also, Sydney was saying, need to do on the podcast at some point. And is also a Thanksgiving movie, if you ask me. But after the holidays, we just wanted to do a little more family time. And so we thought we would explore the dynamics of the Thrombey family, because this movie from 2015, Rian Johnson, I'm not even looking at IMDb, by the way, I'm just remembering from my little brain. This movie is about when a patriarch of a family, a writer, a murder mystery writer, is found with his throat slit. They have to determine if it's a suicide or if there's something more afoot when the inheritance is at play. But it also stars this year's sexiest man alive, Chris Evans. So that's great and fun.
And it also stars, in my personal opinion, the sexiest man alive ever, Christopher Plummer, RIP.
Oh!
He is really handsome. When did he pass away?
Last year? This year?
He has.
Recently.
What movie ever?
What?
Must have been, because it came out in 2019.
Oh, I don't know if this was his last movie ever.
He passed away February 5th of last year.
What else? Okay, yeah, I mean, Christopher Plummer is sexy.
Arguably sexy. Christopher Plummer is the sexiest man. Like, we've all seen Sound of Music, right?
I actually haven't.
Okay, I know what we're doing when I'm back in LA that first week of December. We're doing a Sound of Music watch party.
But what if I want to watch other things?
It doesn't matter.
And we only have so much time in the day. Is that really priority number one?
Yes.
Do you think?
Yes.
Oh my.
It is. Okay. I've made so many people watch The Sound of Music. It is a passion of mine.
Well, I can't wait to do that. But first, I do think we have to finish this episode for time to move forward, is my understanding of how time works. So maybe we should get back to Knives Out, which is a good film. It's a fun film. Sydney, it was your first time watching it, right?
It was.
Oh, God, really?
Yeah, I have never seen it before. I did love seeing Chris Evans in a festive seasonal sweater.
Oh, everybody lost their fucking goddamn minds for Chris Evans in knitwear when this movie came out.
Here's the thing. One thing that we have learned is that men in knitwear makes the ladies' panties wet.
Nothing hotter than a guy in a chunky knit sweater.
Exactly. Best hot underwear.
The sweater I'm wearing right now is Adam.
See?
Wow! Get that pod boyfriend on the pod for a little pod smooch.
I can't kiss him right now because, as you might have heard, I am literally recording from my deathbed. I don't sound this sexy every day, so I'm not allowed to kiss him on the mouth, unfortunately.
tragic. But I appreciate the sexy voice. I mean, you know, I love that. What's her name? The lady that I like from Baby Genius.
I don't fucking know that.
She's in Serial Mom with Matthew Lillard and Peggy Sue Getting Married. Do you know who I'm talking about yet?
No.
Nope. Never gonna know.
Baby Geniuses. Past. Kathleen Turner.
Gorgeous.
That's my wife. That's my wife from when I was like 5 years old watching the movie Baby Geniuses, discovering things about myself.
Her baby, that was your wife. Interesting.
Yeah. I mean, the movie's about babies. She's in there having a sexy, deep voice. I made my college boyfriend watch it in college because I was like, this movie resonates. Don't know why.
But what anyway, if we talked about Knives Out?
No.
Yeah, what if we talked about Knives Out? It's a Fifth Tuesday. Again, this is a freebie episode, which means we don't have to talk about the movie that we're doing, question mark.
No.
No. Monica's sick this week, and Sydney and I, and by Sydney and I really just mean I, running wild, I guess, taking over. But it's cool. We're gonna stay totally on topic. Great. And everybody's loving the little detours that we do have. Sydney has something to say. You take it, girl.
One thing that I didn't realize is so like the I guess like the main girl in this, Marta, right?
Uh-huh.
That's Ana de Armas, right?
Ana de Armas.
And she's the one that dated Ben Affleck for like a really long time.
This was her breakout American role.
Oh
my god, did you guys watch that? I heard it was
so fucking anyway. I heard it was deeply depressing. I heard it was like very upsetting.
I tried watching it and I stopped
watching that. This time, because I knew what had happened. She was so excited to be Marilyn Monroe, and they did a bad job. Not her.
My God.
I can't talk about that, but the subject matter of the film.
Yeah. Honestly, I do watch Knives Out, though, and I am transported to 2019 when I saw this movie in theaters, and it was a time pre Ana de Armas dating Ben Affleck, and going on their little coffee walks during the pandemic and him throwing out the cardboard cutout of her, etc.
God, didn't know about that. I did not follow that goss at all, but that's good to
know. It was a fascinating PR relationship or not PR relationship. I don't know. He sure got married to Jennifer Lopez pretty fast afterwards. But Ana de Armas is a fascinating celeb for celeb gossip in general, because she like had beef with her own update account for a minute there. But in this movie, I don't remember why. In this movie, though, she is like so cute, so sweet. Like, I think she was really well cast here because she is like such a fresh face for American audiences for the most part.
The little baby cherub.
Yeah, and she stands out and holds her own really well among this cast, because not only does it have two of the sexiest men alive, it also is just like stacked in general. Jamie Lee Curtis, Toni Collette, you know what I mean? It's got a bunch of people. It's got a lot of familiar
faces. Daniel Craig with a weird
Daniel Craig accent. You said that you had thoughts about that, Sydney. I would love to hear them.
Those thoughts are, I hate people doing a southern accent. Like, seriously, it just sounds like everybody attempting to do a southern accent, you know? Like, it's not what a southern accent actually, like, what state was he going for? Each state sounds different.
Yeah, I've got no fucking clue, man.
That was very much like discourse at the time. And Ryan Johnson has, per IMDb trivia, but I remember there was like convos about it. He said in something that was quoted here, I had written into the script that Blanc speaks with a subtle southern accent. And then it says they all finished laughing, and then he continued. So like clearly that's a joke, because that's not what happened in the film. But Daniel Craig researched accents and became attached to historian Shelby Foote's cadence and drawl. So Ryan Johnson said, it's kind of that. It's a little Foghorn Leghorn. Uh-huh. And it's a little Harlan Pepper, which is Christopher Guest's character in Best in Show, which is a little fun because Christopher Guest is married to Jamie Lee Curtis. But I think that's kind of part of his appeal as a character, is that he is like so cartoonish, and obviously Benoit Blanc is like a very particular strong choice of a name that has vibes with it that don't really match somebody who comes with a Foghorn Leghorn drawl with them, you know what I mean?
So here's my thing, if he was gonna do a Southern accent with a name like Benoit Blanc, he should have had like a Creole Louisiana accent, because French, know what I mean? Like something like that.
Sure.
Yeah.
But if he says
the Louisiana Purchase.
But if he's saying that like Shelby Foote was his thing.
Do you know who Shelby Foote is? I didn't know
he's
that.
He's like he does a lot of stuff with the Civil War. He's from Mississippi.
Oh.
And that accent like isn't really a Mississippi accent. So I guess it's real heavy on the Foghorn Leghorn over here.
Well, maybe the whole point is for it to be something that doesn't make any sense, because he doesn't really make any sense either. He's like this very like serious detective, but when he talks, like he has this like ominous presence, especially like at the beginning of this movie when he doesn't speak at all. He's just sitting in the back of all of these interviews,
hitting the piano,
getting on the piano key every now and then. He's building up all of this fucking anticipation for him to finally reveal who he is. And then he talks in this, it's this fucking hilarious, bumbly ass accent that doesn't make any fucking sense, coming out of Daniel Craig, James Bond ass Daniel Craig, sexy ass Daniel Craig. So I think
he was another sexiest man alive at some point.
Probably.
He's definitely,
but yeah,
objectively one of the sexiest men alive. But yeah, I mean, like, I think that it was a funny, hilarious choice, if only for that moment, but also for the rest of the film. Every time we talk, I laughed.
I also think a little bit you're supposed to question, like, is that his real accent? Is he doing a character? Can I trust the information that I'm getting from him, or is he withholding or putting on a show or pretending? You know what I mean? Like, it's supposed to kind of make you have a relationship with him where you're like, what is he doing? What's his vibe?
I mean, because this movie is, it's a genius movie. I'll say that the first time I ever watched this, it had been so hyped up. I don't think I saw it in theaters. When I finally saw it, I was super let down because it had been so hyped up, like super stupid hyped up. And so when I
Yeah, I mean, it was nominated for an Oscar for its screenplay.
I mean, it slaps. It does slap. But now with space away from all the hype, like, and it's quieter hype now that happens after 3 years or whatever, I liked a lot better this time. But it's really, really smart, really well done. I thought that Ryan's name was Rion this entire time, though. And so when you said Ryan, I was very disappointed. I've been saying Rion Johnson in my head for years. Doesn't matter. But now you know.
I could be wrong. I've never
Googled
it. I just made assumptions.
Maybe my dyslexic ass, I kept being like, Rain Johnson. Cool.
Great. Well, we'll never know what it is for sure. I was thinking about
here's the thing. We can just keep calling him all three different names, like how they think Marta really is from all these different. They're like, she's from Brazil. She's from Uruguay. She's from Ecuador.
Paraguay.
That shit was so funny and so true to life. Jesus Christ. They just do that shit all the time. But I was making a point about Benoit Blanc, though. This whole story is based on like something like an Agatha Christie novel. And I've read a few Agatha Christie novels now. And they always have, not always, but they've have these detectives in all the books. And a lot of them are characters. Like I'm reading right now, what is it? A Murder is Announced. And it's Ms. Marple. Well, story, I think. And the one I just read, The Murder at the Vicarage, that definitely was a Miss Marple story. And she's like a old granny who just is nosy, but she's got like this like great mind for detective work, and she's a total character, right? And so it feels like Benoit Blanc feels like something born from that, you know? So I don't know. I like that he is this like nonsensical dude.
Yeah, I mean, I think in general, they're borrowing a lot of lore from other like mystery and detective properties.
Yeah.
Really in conversation with them as a genre, which is fun. And I mean, I think you can tell they put a lot of effort with the script into working out a fun mystery, fun obstacles along the way for each of the characters. Like, I was taking notes really the whole time, being like, okay, what's the timeline that they're giving me? Like, who are the characters? Like, let me write everything out. I want to know, like, the pieces that I have for this gameplay in its own way. But it's really fun. They do a great job. And the way that they play it out is really interesting, too, because it is a long movie. It is over two hours
and 10 minutes. It's
so long. But it didn't really feel that way. But I was also hopped up on cold medicine when I watched it. So anyone not on drugs, can you say if it felt long?
It felt long to me.
I think it maybe felt a little long when I saw it in the theater in 2019, but then I didn't have a good concept of time today because I kept like stopping to write notes. So I was not like, it wasn't an uninterrupted flow. That said, I think it can be a little bit hard to get into sometimes. Mr. Rian Johnson talked about how every time he like passed the script by anyone, they were like, this is a great script, but like woof those first 30 pages, because so much of it is it's really fun, but you can see how it could be like hard to balance and hard to like build your momentum when it's partially these interviews but also partially these flashbacks, and it's like you're kind of bouncing around a lot. It's hard to settle into like a narrative flow to some degree, but they do so much fun, so many fun things with it when they're like cutting between the characters and like cutting between what a character tells you versus what they can show you from evening.
It's just such brilliant character development. Like it really, really it gives you like, cause there's so many characters, right? And obviously it's long-winded, but it does a really succinct job, I think, of like, telling you exactly who all these bitches are, like, before you get into the meat and potatoes of the actual plot. Like, the fact that everybody's memory is different from each other's, like, especially with, when they're bringing, Harlan the birthday cake with all the candles, everybody remembers that they were the one giving him the cake, and they had their heads right around his head smiling with him. Everybody remembers it that way, but they can't all have given him the cake unless they all brought him separate cakes, which we know they didn't do. So I just thought there are so many little brilliant things in that. But yeah, I mean, I guess it could have been shorter.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that I would cut anything though, is the thing. Like, I do think that like everything is there is kind of, I don't think there's like dead weight at any point in the film necessarily. But I also think that's part of, because this film's strength is really as like a character study of these people and this family, you know what I mean? And so even if you had scenes that were like plot extraneous, they're so like character moment strong the whole time. That it like builds into the fabric of the film nicely instead of like distracting from the plot.
And here's the thing, I bet you 100% that this movie was way, 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 way longer, because did it feel to you guys that Ricky Lindholm, aka Donna Thrombey, who is Walt's,
she's
a hilarious actress. She is so
funny.
She had one line the entire time and she was going, she screamed. That was it. They definitely had shit with her. She would have been one of the people that they would interview, but I think they left it on the cutting room floor. So this was probably like a 4-hour long movie.
That makes total sense, actually, because I was just thinking that, like, I don't think Jaden, the Nazi grandson, got an interview in the beginning either.
No, he didn't, and they barely did anything with Catherine Langford, who was Meg.
Well,
not I know, but they did very, very short snippets, so I bet they had more, and they cut it. I think they did a good job of cutting it.
Mm-hmm.
She's not as interesting as the adults.
This cast is, like, really stacked, but sometimes when you have, like, too big of an ensemble, I think it takes away, because we didn't get, like, know what I mean? Like, I would have liked more of each character if there was like less people. Like, I get, yeah, it's like a big family. It's like really intertwined. There's more people to assume, mm-hmm, who did it, but and we don't like
chaos. Yeah.
Yeah. But like, we don't get more plots into it. Know what I mean? Like,
they create a lot of really fascinating dynamics that just like don't really get anywhere. Investigated.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally. Like, I want to know more about shitty ass Jacob Thrombey's alt-right baby Nazi shit so I can shit on him more. But what they did give us was amazing. And I think also from our perspective, like as younger people watching this, we're like, we know all these young faces from all of these little like movies and stuff. Like, I watched 13 Reasons Why. I'm sorry. So
me too.
I'm so sorry. I watched all of it.
I'm so sorry. I didn't watch all of it, but I read the book in high school and it fucked my shit up. So I had to watch the show. And then I was like, oh
my God.
Yeah.
I didn't watch the last season, but I watched the first two.
You didn't
two.
Miss anything.
Yeah. But like, we love those characters. And so I was so happy for them to be in this. But, you know, people were waiting to hear what Jamie Lee would say next. You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, but yeah, yeah. I mean, my only complaint with the casting in general, other than some people were underutilized, is that both Toni Collette and Catherine Langford are Australian, and they're like both not like Joni married in and then had her child. I think they should have been allowed to keep their Australian accents, and I think that would have brought a lot of color and vibrancy to their roles, and I think it would have made sense, and I think it would have been a blast.
I don't know, I think part of the thing with this movie is like American Greed.
Yeah,
that's like one of the things. Yes. You know,
but Toni Collette at least could have kept her accent.
No, but she's one of the worst of them.
Yeah, but she's adopted American principles. The longer she's here,
Fine, fair, but I don't know. I like the choices that they made. Since we're talking about cast, though, I have to like shine on my girl Edie Patterson, Fran. She is such. God, I didn't know who she was when I saw this in 2019 because I hadn't watched Righteous Gemstones yet, and she is hilarious in that show. She is so good. She's like the only daughter of the like I can't remember his name, but like this head guy of a super church. She's the only daughter, and she's so funny in that. And she has a similar energy in this, like the like goofiness of her character, but she is such a knockout. She has such great comedic timing, and like just her whole look was like perfect for this. I love that she was like sleuthing, doing her own sleuthing with her like I don't even know, like true crime dramas that she watches that informed all of her decisions. Hey, that shit, it helps.
Absolutely. There's a lot to be learned from Hallmark movies in general. And I do think it's fun that they made one up for this movie. And I also think it's fun that Danica McKellar, who is a real child star turned Hallmark movie actress and other things as well, I'm sure. But she saw this film and she loved it. They put her in it and mentioned her all the time. And she bought Mr. Ryan Rion Rain Johnson a knife that said Deadly Silence or whatever that fake movie is called.
That's awesome. Oh, also just,
she was like, thank you. So fun.
I Googled it and you're right, Chelsea. It's Ryan.
Oh, yeah. Hell yeah.
I it makes sense. When you said Ryan, I didn't doubt you because I was like, oh yeah, it would be like some just like spicy way to spell Ryan, you know?
Oh, do you know what I was going to mention earlier? And then I don't think I said it because somebody else had something to say. I was thinking about how they make a joke about Rian Johnson in the new Scream movie when they say, yeah, like, yeah, Rian Johnson is the one who directed Stab 8 in the new Scream movie, because they said the Knives Out guy. And
yeah.
This is Knives Out. This is that movie.
That movie.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, he apparently, Rian Johnson dedicated Jacob's character to essentially the killers from Scream 5, because he dedicated it to all of the little fanboys who were mean online about the new Star Wars franchise, etc. And it was just like, whatever, eat my shit.
As somebody who's saving Star Wars movies for marriage, I do not come in with the Star Wars hate baggage that a lot of people did with this movie. Incredible.
Oh, for this movie people came in with baggage?
I think because he like filmed the Star Wars movie, was it before this?
Yeah.
And so they were like,
yeah,
they had like they didn't like the Star Wars movie, so they were like hating on him just like a bunch. Big haters for sure.
Big haters. I mean, he has had an interesting career for sure. He's done a whole bunch of different stuff. And one day I'm going to watch Brick and all those other things. But he directed some of the like best Breaking Bad episodes as well. So his chops are totally bona fide.
I've also didn't watch Breaking Bad.
But people have like totally conflicting feelings on him because of Star Wars. But I would think this film, if any, would prove his merit. And I mean, it proved enough that they have the sequel coming out very soon, if not out already by the time this episode drops. I think it's got a limited theater release. Yeah, a limited theater release. And then they're doing like an online Netflix drop at some point after that.
It's coming out Christmas, I think, or just before.
But yeah, I mean, not only is there the sequel, which is out or already out imminently, they're like committed to a third one already. Like Knives Out 3 has been announced.
I mean, people went fucking feral for this shit. And it makes sense because I think like we're talking about how it draws from so many classics like Clue and Agatha Christie shit and like anything that's a mystery. But I think they did such a good job of balancing those classic elements and adding in modern subject matter, you know, or like Inheritance stuff is timeless. That's always a problem. But like the, you know, just the social things that they brought up and interwove so seamlessly into this movie, like I think they did a really good job, like perfectly almost bringing it into the modern day. Because some of those mystery movies that they do that are just a straight, like, remake, like what was it? Like, Murder on the Orient Express or something.
Yeah.
Didn't that flop recently? Like, nobody gave a shit, you know? Like, so, like, they did.
Oh, and, like, Death on the Nile Death also. On the Nile. Although, obviously, that had its own other
issues. I didn't see it. I didn't fucking see it. But, like, those.
It had the Armie Hammer issue because he was a main star and then. There was the whole Armie Hammer scandal and, you know, hard to completely cut him out of a film. But they sure gave their best effort to the marketing at least. Yeah. Who knows how much of the final film he was in? Cause I didn't see it.
I didn't know he was in it. So they did a really good job. Had a coughing, not crying. But yeah, like those ones don't always still hit because like, you know, it's not going
to do they speak to the modern audience.
Yeah. And this one was speaking directly to the modern audience, but also had that classic. So it's like money bags. We got the youngies, we got the oldies, we got everybody. Good job, Ryan.
Yeah. I mean, I think that, let's just dive in and talk about some of the dynamics. Cause I think that is like as central to the plot as the mystery elements itself.
Yeah.
They set up
more like, talk about it overall than through as it goes along.
Yeah, I mean, they set up a lot of really interesting stuff. Like from the beginning, it opens with the discovery, Fran discovering Harlan with his throat slit, but then they like jump to after the funeral with the interviews. And when Martha comes in, you kind of already like are starting to see her dynamic with this family. She wasn't invited to the funeral, but people keep saying to her like, oh, I wanted you there, but I got outvoted. And it's like, at least two people say that. And of the two people that we know who would have voted, like if those are the people who said they wanted her there, who would really have voted against her? You know what I mean? So obviously there's also this like, yeah, there's this like really weird disingenuous thing where they're all like, you're family to us. Not really though. And I do want you to know that, but I'm going to say it so that it's polite. And there's just like these weird messy dynamics where even with Catherine Langford, her whole thing is the way that it's like, that's actually bestie until push comes to shove. And then, ultimately my loyalties are so... Yeah, my loyalties are so not with you to the point that I will give my family, who are more malicious than I am, ammunition against you.
Yeah, that was such a fucked up reveal. And she's
never
like,
trust anybody, quite frankly. Like, tell no bitch your secrets, except for me. Tell me everything. I need to know.
Yeah, tell Sydney everything. It's safe with her. Don't tell me. It's not safe with me because I love secrets and I will share them. I tell my mommy everything, so
sorry about it. Moms don't count.
Moms don't count. But yeah, I mean, I think it's really interesting the way that they set up the dynamics within the family too, where it's like, do they all hate each other? Yes. Like, they all have these different ideas about what's the right way to move forward. They all have these different motivations. You know, Jamie Lee Curtis's husband is having an affair. He doesn't want her to find out. Jacob wants to be a Nazi online. Catherine Langford wants to tell him how bad he is without ever really needing to examine like her own privilege meaningfully. Like, they're just all at each other's throats the whole time. They even get into like politics a little bit, although they just kind of like skim the surface to give you a hint of their thoughts without really. What?
That politics scene was so bad when they like dragged Marta into it.
Oh, my yeah. God. When he just hands her the plate also yeah. when she's standing there. What?
Oh,
apparently that was an improvised moment from that actor. So he, Michael Shannon, like he apparently was one of the funniest guys on set and just like coming up with stuff left and right and having a great time.
That scans.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like they had a lot of.
I thought it.
Oh, you're right.
John Johnson who plays Richard who hands her the.
Yeah.
Yeah.
AKA Dakota Johnson's father.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
The family tree. Our queen,
Dakota Johnson. Her daddy.
They're all related.
Well, it's so interesting because apparently Michael Shannon, who played Jaden Martell's father in this movie, they played like dad and son in another movie as well. After this, Chris Evans, who played Jaden Martell's cousin, they play like. Actually, I never saw Defending Jacob. I just assumed that they play father and son in that, but I guess I don't know for sure. But they're in it together for sure. Do you know what that is? Did you ever watch that?
I didn't, but I really, really wanted to.
Yeah, it's Apple TV series.
I got Apple TV, and then I forgot about it. I never
watched it. Well, you'll circle back one day, maybe.
I actually downloaded it for the plane, and then I
never watched it.
Oh, so it's keeping.
Maybe now that you've watched them both in this, you'll be like, wow, I'm so sick. And this is that show's time to shine. Okay. Let's talk about the mystery here though, because actually it is super well done. I wrote down in my notes, the timeline that the police present in the beginning, which is like, as they've understood it, which I think is maybe going to be the easiest way to go through the various events of the murder evening, at least. And then we can go through the follow-up afterwards. But the timeline they give us starts at 11:30 when the party ends and Harlan goes upstairs with Marta. They spill the go board. Joni comes to check on them. 10 minutes later, Marta leaves. And that's at about midnight when Walt is outside smoking with Jacob. And then 15 minutes later, Harlan comes downstairs for a midnight snack and gets like shooed right back upstairs. At 12:30, Meg comes home. And then at 3 a.m., she wakes up to the dogs barking. And they estimate that the time of death is somewhere between 12:15 after Harlan was spotted getting his midnight snack and 2 a.m. before the dogs woke up. So they've kind of set up this like amorphous time of like they have this creaky staircase. We would have known if someone was going up and down it. What could have happened? We don't know. He slit his throat. It seems like pretty cut and dry, but like, why would he do that? And if he did do that, why would someone hire a private detective? Because that's the real mystery also, is at some point, Benoit Blanc goes like, there's been one very important question that was dodged today by me about who hired me. And then you're like, oh yeah, why is that guy here? Like literally who did that? Who
and
would
he's
have-
like, I don't know.
Yes, like even he doesn't know. Although, do you think he does? Do you think he has an idea?
Well, so later it's like he kind of like figures it out when we learn who and like why. Mm-hmm. And so like, but I don't think when he gets in there, he initially like knows who hired him. But I think he figures it out.
Yeah. I mean, spoilers for this movie. I am going to say spoilers at this point. So if you don't want to know spoilers, that I just said the word spoilers 5 times. So I feel like you should get that idea by now.
There's about to be a spoiler.
Spoilers
just for anybody who really needed one more warning to feel good about leaving. But Ransom, Chris Evans, doesn't show up until halfway through the movie. Like, a lot of this movie is just, he's got like an implied presence because he's being talked about so much. And we see like a picture of him while Michael Shannon's character is talking about him to set up like who he is and to be like, familiar face, Chris Evans, you know this guy, which means that we can kind of like build his character up in his absence anyway. But he only shows up halfway through. So like, even if Benoit Blanc like would have picked up on him as like a sneaky guy immediately, like he's simply not there. You know what I mean?
Totally. He does not exist.
Simply. Yeah. And everybody just like talks shit about him as like a nasty layabout who does nothing and lives off granddaddy's dime. And then like, he doesn't even really defend himself that much throughout. I mean, they do a good job of making you think, actually, maybe he's nice, boy.
Nice.
It's all just everyone being assholes. But you know, the moral of the story is that everybody sucks.
I mean, they set up good motives for anybody to have killed him, really, because you have Richard, Linda's husband, who doesn't want Harlan to tell Linda that he's having an affair. You have Ransom, who's getting cut out of the will. You have Walt, Harlan's youngest son, who he's like firing from his publishing company. Presumably Donna's not happy about that either. You have Joni, who has been stealing from Harlan, and is getting cut off, and like Meg is getting cut off because of that. Like, you have all of the Harlan's kids are being affected in some way. Like, someone in each of those family units has the pressure on, essentially. Like, Linda's really one of the only people who they don't present you with the motive for her, but also anybody would look at Jamie Lee Curtis and be like, yeah, she's totally powerful enough to kill anybody if she wanted to.
Jamie Lee has the power.
Yeah, but I don't get the vibe. She's so like reverent to him. I like,
yeah,
write her off as being someone who would kill him. Because she's not losing.
She's set. Yeah.
She's set. It's like Richard, the reason that Richard would do that is because he signed a prenuptial agreement and he cheated on his wife.
And he's so cheating on his wife.
Fucking nothing come the time that she finds out, you know?
But Linda really started her own business. So she is successful enough now. Like, Joni started her own business too, but Flam. That's so funny. Flam. What a name.
The only Flam that I like is Top Chef winner Colorado Joe Flam, who is incredible. I love him.
I trust you.
I like the name Flam because it sounds like phlegm, and I have enough of that already right now because I'm sick.
Sad.
I don't like
sad for Monica.
Flam.
Ryan Johnson, change it. Go back and change it.
I love her character. Just a little shout out to Joni because they do such a good job styling her for who she is. Like, Toni Collette has this like gorgeous, perfect beach waves blonde hair, and she's made up to the nines. And I love that she's all like hippy dippy. It's giving Gwyneth Paltrow goop. You know what I mean?
Yes, that's, and it's supposed to, for sure.
A wannabe Kourtney Kardashian wanting to be Gwyneth Paltrow.
Yeah. Exactly.
I love when that like scene where she's like, yeah, like I just vibe with the family, and she's like dancing and trying to like pull on like
get Jamie Linda
and she's just like, what are you doing?
Oh my
I'm
god,
like, that's me at family functions, and I'm not ashamed of that.
And you shouldn't be. Again, we're ladies in our 30s who like to have a good time. It doesn't matter if you're not having a good time with us. Am I going to bring the party wherever I go? Yes, I am.
Of course.
But yeah, I mean,
I'm not in my 30s yet, so give me my last 6 months. Thank you. Anyway,
Monica's not having fun. She doesn't like to have a good time. She wants to be excluded from this narrative.
Yeah, only ladies in their 30s are allowed to have a good time.
Only ladies in their 30s can be cringe on Maine.
And also horny on Maine. It's reserved.
I mean, I have a bad time for 6 more months and let me.
Listen, Monica, age before beauty, okay? Like, we're having a great time.
That's fine. That's fair.
But yeah, I mean, they set up the motives. They set up the characters. But the mystery is what's really interesting, because they set up this situation where it's like, how could it have been anyone other than Harlan? But clearly there's plenty of reason to believe that it was someone other than Harlan. And I think the way they reveal that with like Marta's flashback mid coin flip from Benoit Blanc is like very well done.
No, totally. And it kind of takes the wind out of your sails for a second, because you're like, wait, every single one of these bitches could have killed him. But you're telling me that it was like accidental medical malpractice, like, or whatever. I don't know if you'd call it that. Poor Marta. But like an accidental, like, medical mix up kind of thing. Like, mm-hmm. That doesn't make sense with all of the things that you've heard tonight. But like, you know that that's true because it's her true. All the flashbacks, well, not all the flashbacks, but her flashback from her, the girl who barfed when she lies, it's true.
Yeah, she literally vomits, like not even like a gag, like she actually.
What pooped. A funny little gag that they do about her gagging.
Not me. Gag. I love to lie. And if I had to do that, I would be bulimic.
Yeah, I mean. I just think it's really fun. Michael Shannon's character says at some point earlier on, because one of the police officers is like a huge Harlan Thrombey fan. And he's like, how'd your dad come up with all these plots? How'd your dad come up with this? And Michael Shannon is like, he always said the plots just would appear to his head fully formed pretty much. And like, you get a sense of that almost immediately in Martha's flashback, because you see them playing their game of Go, you see it getting spilled over, like you see her realizing that she's given him what she thinks is the wrong medicine and like processing that. And immediately he's like, okay, don't call the police. Here's what you're going to do. Like, you're going to go, you're going to drive your car out. You're going to park it here. You're going to come back, climb up the trellis, come through the secret window. Like, immediately he's like coming up with the whole plot on his feet.
He's thought about this before, quite frankly.
He has 100%. Look, I mean, I think anybody who has even a scotch of anxiety and lives in a house such as that would be thinking of all the ways an intruder could break in. You know what I mean? Like, it's a big house. It's like kind of spooky in a little bit. There's a lot of secret passageways.
My dream home.
Doors and stuff. Yeah, I mean, I love it. But if I lived there, I absolutely would be like, okay, what are the ways that I am vulnerable to crime and intrusions? I don't know. And as a murder mystery writer, also, I'm sure your brain is just like doing that kind of thing all the time. Like, how would I set up a little mystery here? I'm a storyteller. I'm entertaining myself, passing the time by coming up with little stories. So he's definitely thought through many a time climbing up the trellis through the secret door window. You know what I mean? Like, he's played around with the ideas a lot. It's not hard for it to all coalesce into this one immediate plan.
No, and it's a genius plan. I mean, God, I'm just a second for how heartbreaking that scene is, though. Just so heartbreaking. She's just freaking out, and there's, like, nothing she can do. Like, oh, it was a very moving scene. I was very upset. And the fact that, like talk about someone who's actually selfless. All these bitches talking about being selfless and, like, what they'll do for her and blah, 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 blah. But he, like, is literally, like, I'll slit my own throat so you can escape, like, and not be punished for something that wasn't
there. He doesn't want them to find out that her mom is here illegally.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think he's such an interesting character because he kind of talks a little bit with Marta in that scene about all the things that he wishes he had done differently, like the ways he wishes he had supported his family other than just financially. Because I do think he probably, you know, 10 years before this movie would have been like a very different character to watch. And I think as he's like getting older and is like reckoning with his age and the fact that, I mean, he clearly is getting his affairs in order generally. So he's like working on his will and stuff.
It was his 85th birthday.
Yeah. I mean, I think he's giving a lot of thought to like his legacy and like, what effect has he actually had on his family and on the world? And the Harlan we're seeing is very different than the Harlan that was before. And he's like, I guess at this point, and I hope I still have plenty of time to make things right with my family, but I guess at this point, the best that I can do is stop enabling them like first things first.
Yeah.
And you know, they don't like that. Can you believe it? They didn't want to hear that. Crazy.
It's just hilarious because they're all talking in all their interviews about how they're all self-made. You know, I'm self-made, mm-hmm. self-made that. But none of them are. Not even Jamie Lee Curtis, you know? It's
yeah, because like Trump.
I started my business with just a small $1 million loan from my father.
My father. Like,
yeah.
That's not, like, people don't get that, you know? People mm-hmm. get that cushion.
$1 million loan without interest from someone who has a spare million on hand. Like,
that you probably never had to actually pay back.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Just a small gift of one milli.
A milli.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just, they do such a good job of exposition in this movie. And like really giving you all the information you need in a way that doesn't feel clunky, in part because Harlan is like a mystery writer and in part because Benoit Blanc is like a detective. And so they can lean into these tropes where in that scene, Harlan is going, oh, this would be great for a character and for a mystery. Okay, so you're saying if a character had this dosage given to them of this medicine, they would have symptoms in 5 minutes. Oh, and they'd be stone cold dead in 10 minutes. And oh, here's what you need to reverse it. Like, oh, these are the stakes. Like, they spell it out so well for you to really feel like the weight of what's going on, while like seamlessly slipping it in. You know what I mean? They really weaved it all together really nicely.
That, yeah, I totally agree with you. It's, there's so much going on at once and it's perfectly woven together. I don't know. It's really good. I loved it. But yeah, once you realize that Marta is actually the person, or realize
yes.
her quotes, like that she is the person who perpetrated this crime, the rest of the movie gets all the more anxiety producing because we're in on the secret and she's trying to keep it, but she barfs every time she lies. So it's just so funny watching her try to cover her tracks, like literally when there's the mud and she walks all over the
track. What? Huh? Oh, were you calling me? Yeah.
When she like fucks up the videotape, when she finds the piece of the trellis she like knocked off and she just like keeps
fixed. Yeah, I mean, it's so fun. And I think that's part of what makes it a really interesting, like, innovative film as well. Not just that it catered to modern audiences by talking about, like, modern issues, but also because so often the murder mystery is structured to just have the big exposition at the end and have you the whole time going,
yeah,
what happened? And in this one, it tells you like 20 minutes in, here's what happened. That's not like the narrative of this film. The narrative of this film isn't necessarily the mystery, although obviously we know there's more mystery to be solved. But the narrative is like, how is this character going to get away with it? Or are they going to get away with it? They kind of like take the rug out from underneath you in that aspect so that it leaves you guessing in a way that in another movie, you'd be like trying to solve it in your head the whole time instead of just following along.
But then it ends up, you do have to still keep solving
you
it.
Do. You do have to solve it. Like
you'll never have to stop solving it.
Like, it's yeah. like Benoit Blanc says so eloquently, it feels like there's a hole in the middle of this case. It's a donut and there's a hole. But wait, there's a hole inside of the donut hole. In itself is another donut. Like, it was just, I was like, shut the fuck up. And it was so funny.
But I did go get donuts this morning after I watched this movie in preparation. Like, I had to go buy some donuts. Made me really hungry.
Blame you.
Yeah, but I mean, I think it is just like the scenes where Ransom comes in. They have like just done very recently before that a scene of like Marta petting the dogs and Benoit Blanc or whatever being like, dogs are such a good judge of character. Like, they love Marta. And then when Ransom rolls up, they're like barking at him. He's like kind of pushing them away. So immediately you get the setup of like Ransom sucks, other than the 20 minutes earlier where everybody was telling you that Ransom sucks. But he just, I mean, I think, again, he is just a person as an actor and as a character who's got the riz. Like, it is hard not to like him when he shows up, even if you know he's an asshole, because you know he's an asshole, because he knows he's an asshole. When he just starts telling everybody to eat shit, definitely eat shit. Like, he's so entertaining. You can't take your eyes off of him.
No, it's that sweater.
Ugh. Yeah. And then everybody blows up when they hear about the will, and you get that moment where the camera like goes to like handheld shaky cam as Marta is like trying to escape to her car. And then he like swoops in to spirit her to safety. Like, it is very easy in those moments to be like, this is it. Maybe Ransom isn't as bad as everybody said. Is Ransom maybe the best of the family? Cause yeah, like maybe he's better than the rest of them because he knows who he is, at least.
Self-aware. It's so,
yeah.
So in that moment when the reveal happens, how quickly these go from like fancy society people, like with their fucking tea and crumpets, that they don't eat tea and crumpets. I don't know, but you know what I'm talking about. And all of a sudden they like become feral psychos. Like the second pretty money is taken away from them, they're just like, all of it is gone. And it is, true colors, baby.
True colors. I mean, I think it hurts most with Catherine Langford's character, Meg, in part because while they did literally put her in a vagina shirt in the beginning, if you guys didn't notice that, and don't worry, I didn't either, but IMDb trivia is like, she's wearing a vagina shirt. And I went back and I was like, she sure is.
Oh my God, is
she sure is. Well, she at least is representing. But either way, she is like toned down in terms of being like a cartoonish character so that you can have the more serious like emotional betrayal of like, even this normal bitch you can't trust, even this normal bitch will turn on you in her own self-interest. And she does it so fast. Like, she's so defensive of Marta until her mom is like, girl, who do you think pays for your college? And she's like, wait, me? My college? Uh-oh.
Me? Oh my God.
But also too, like, baby, your mom's been stealing money. Like, she can absolutely pay for your college. And fun fact that you don't know, but like, your grandpa gave her money for you to finish college.
I think, I don't know,
probably blowing all that money. She's probably blowing money on filler.
Oh God.
She says when she calls Marta later that her mom is broke. And apparently there was like a cut subplot related to the line that made it in where she says she's not on Twitter anymore. Although I loved when she was like, oh, I read a tweet about a headline about an article about Benoit Blanc.
Yeah, that was so funny.
Which honestly is real accurate.
Relatable. Yeah. When Twitter added that feature where it was like, did you read this article? I was like, no, I didn't, but mind your beeswax.
Started doing research and then I decided, no, just going on vibes today. But the article I read was from The New Yorker and it started off with like, did you read that awesome expose that we did on Benoit Blanc in The New Yorker? Really? That's crazy because it doesn't exist. Like, that's how the article started. Anyway, as far as I got.
That's funny that that's as far as you made. I mean, that's an iconic opener.
I was like, that's all I need.
Yeah, I mean, apparently there is this whole subplot, though, where they were, like, about how her company Flam had shut down, and she'd, like, closed the Twitter account basically to avoid having to correspond with customers, etc., who are upset about presumably not receiving their orders of, I don't know, whatever Flam sells. I presume it's also like the same kind of, what did Goop get in trouble for? The
vagina candle,
jade eggs and stuff. No, I don't think they got in trouble for the vagina candle. I think they just had a candle that smelled like her vagina.
That's exciting.
You can't get in trouble for that. That would be outrageous.
That's what I'm getting everybody for Christmas, actually. A candle that smells like my vagine. You're welcome.
I would love that. You're going to cut it?
Yeah, I am.
No. That would be a more interesting company than just buying a candle that smells like Gwyneth Paltrow's vagine. Although there are so many like in Reddit AMAs and stuff like that where people are like, what does this celebrity smell like? That like, I do think she's got some intrigue there for her product line.
See?
I'm not saying she didn't catch on the idea. I bet that sold candles. Whatever. Anyway. But yeah, clearly there's a lot of stuff that didn't make the cut. But yeah, I think they set up that reveal so well. And then they have that moment when Marta and Ransom are out eating. And he's like, well, I know you can't lie without throwing up. And I just watched you eat a whole plate of pork and beans or whatever.
And he had ordered that extra bowl already. We should have started doubting him again right then.
Right.
I mean, they do set it up really well. Like, Harlan tells us, like, Ransom, I thought, was the one who was most like me. Like, Ransom, I thought, was like my little protege, essentially. And he had that summer where he did research for him. But they set it up really well to be like, Ransom is the one who has the brain that could rival Harlan's little mystery brain. And they kind of give you the information almost where it's like, who else could be keeping up this way? And we know, as it turns out, at the end, the only other person who can keep up in that same way, other than Benoit Blanc, possibly, is Marta, because she could beat Harlan at Go even more often than Ransom could beat Harlan at Go.
I loved that analogy.
And yeah, they also...
so hard.
Yeah, they sneak a line in early on, too, where they say that Ransom can't tell the difference between a stage prop and a real knife, which is really, really fun.
I know. I loved that. I loved that. And also, at the very, very end, I don't know if this is too early to say, but she's, like, drinking out of a mug that is in the very first, like, scenes of the movie, and it says, like, my house, my money, or something. My house, my coffee, or whatever.
Yeah. My rules.
Yeah, my house, my coffee, my rules.
Yeah,
there you go.
So good.
Yeah, I mean, that mug was, like, a pop culture moment after this movie came out. Like, everybody loved that final scene. It rules. But yeah, it's really interesting, having seen the movie, following it after the fact and trying to be like, okay, like, who's making a move when? Because Ransom set up this mystery where Marta, if she had had to, like, look at the labels of the medicine and had given the medicine according to what was on the label, would have killed Harlan. But because she switched it out of instinct, he had to, like, find this other way to cast guilt on her, because they were not going to find anything in Harlan's body other than that it was a suicide. Like, they were not going to find the proof that he needed to circumvent the will, which was his, like, motivation. Yeah, that was his whole thing, was, like, not only was he cut out, but everyone was cut out. And he went, okay, if I can kill Harlan, and if I can frame Marta, then she'll be cut out of the will. It'll have to revert back. And it won't matter that he was cutting us all out, because it'll go to the earlier version. But there are all these, like, obstacles at play where she's too good at her job. She has too kind of a heart. You know what I mean? Like, she immediately, like, fesses up to Harlan. He, like, loves her so much that he would do anything for her, including slitting his own throat. I don't know, just, like, the cat and mouse game after the fact is really fun too. Like, with the ransom note for Ransom.
I love that whole sequence.
Yeah. But where they cover the results, because it's like, obviously if Marta saw it earlier, she would know that it wasn't her fault, because she would be like, oh, actually these are totally normal. She's a nurse. You know what I mean? She'd know how to read the results. And so they hide them from her so that she can maybe be led into, like, destroying evidence and getting in trouble for that, like killing Fran or being responsible for Fran's death. And then, like, even if she didn't destroy evidence, even if she didn't kill Harlan, even if she figures everything out about Ransom, he'll have something on her, and it'll be too late. Like, it's a really great game of cat and mouse all the way to the end.
But it's so fucked up that, like, he, like, sacrifices Fran for this. Like, that is so horrible. Also, shouts out again to my girl. I just felt so sad that in the very, that, like, big tense reveal scene, that she, like, says, oh yeah, Fran's fine. And that's how they like get his confession. She's fucking dead, man. She's been dead the whole time. Not the whole time. She's been dead for the last 5 seconds. Like, it just, it's so sad because she's just a nice lady who has a cool spot to hide her joints. And we love that.
Yeah.
Okay.
But she doesn't even touch them ever since Meg her got her that jewel. Yeah, I mean, woof. It's they have so much fun with the house as a setting. They have so much fun like playing around with the pieces. That final reveal where she pukes and then Ransom is like, see, she's lying. And she, first of all, she blew chunks onto his face.
Over him.
Sick. He deserved it.
Onto his face. He deserved that. And then he's ate, like, she's lying.
She ate.
And it's like, oh, 100%. The reveal that she's lying and she's like, yeah, I'm lying about the fact that she is dead after all, which sad for Fran, but means that he just confessed for nothing. Because, I mean, it is iconic when he's like, yeah, I killed Fran, but I guess I didn't. Like, he launches into that monologue.
Marta knows him so well. She knows that he's gonna, like, you know,
be like, I'm white and I'm rich and it's not, I'm gonna be fine. Guess what? Murder's a little diffy.
I love, like, when we find Fran and she's like, you did this, and Marta doesn't know, and then she realized, no, she's saying Hugh did this, because Ransom's first name is Hugh, and she goes, you always made the help call you Hugh.
Yes, they do such a good job of trickling those little details throughout, where when he first walks up, the police are like, Hugh Drysdale, and he's like, call me Ransom, only the help calls me Hugh. Like, they build it out so well of like, boop, 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 little hint here, little hint there, it all comes together in this wonderful picture. The prop knife from a real knife, that to me is the best fucking reveal of the movie and the best setup in the whole film, because it is so fun and like terrifying a little bit when he's like, well, in for a penny, and he grabs the knife and he just like lunges at Marta, and you have this like slow-mo moment, and then he's on her on the ground, knife pressed to her chest, they're both heavy breathing, and you're like, okay, what's happening?
Kiss.
And then he's just like tries to stab her again,
which is so funny.
Is it gonna go, or
I know, oh my god. I love, though, that she, like, shows that she's not to be trifled with a little earlier in the film when Michael Shannon's character, Walt, shows up to her apartment right before she realizes she has the ransom note. And he is threatening to get her mom deported. And it's so fucked up. It is so beyond fucked up. He's doing it and just saying it just so where it sounds like it's a threat.
We want to help
threat,
you,
but yeah. It's like not a threat, you know.
We're offering to help you by reminding you of how wrong things could go for you without our help and us on your side.
Exactly. And then she looks like she's like conceding to it, right? Because she looks scared and she's backing up and she's backing away, and then she stands her ground and she's like, oh, so you said that your money can do all of that for me? Well, it's so funny because it's going to be my money.
My
so
money.
I can do all that for myself.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's a slay.
Good for her, girl.
It's a slay.
Okay. But the real question that I have is, how do I find an old wealthy man and just befriend him and be his companion? And then he leaves me all of his money upon his untimely death.
I don't know, but I do believe if anybody could do it, it would be you.
Thank you.
Seeking arrangements.
That's also, yeah, that's the honest answer.
Seekingarrangement.com.
Yeah.
Our new sponsor, Seekingarrangements.com. Funny that you bring that up, Sydney, because I've just recently partnered with, can you imagine? That's our first sponsor.
Second sponsor, thank you.
Oh, sorry, second sponsor.
But honestly, okay, yeah, that would
arrangement.
I had to scan.
Oh my god.
Yeah, but I mean, it is, it's just, it's so fun. It's so well put together. Again, the cast is great. Like, Lakeith Stanfield as one of the cops is really great. That other cop has worked with Rian Johnson before, Noah Segan. Like, they're very funny little background players.
I love Lakeith. I've got a big crush on
it. It feels like, other than Chris Evans and Christopher Plummer and Ana de Armas, everyone gets like a collective 5 minutes each of screen time. You know what I mean? At best, like, again, like, Ricky is, she really just has that one line, that one moment.
Really, she's just like, ah, that's it.
But yeah. I mean, I think it came together really well. And I love that Harlan's mom, great Nana Juanetta, was an essential part of solving the mystery after all. Like, they treat her almost as furniture for a lot of the film. And it pays off really well, because then you get that moment where Benoit Blanc is talking to her and is like, I think actually you're going to be a great help to me, and I am willing to sit here and be patient until I find out that that's true. And the audience doesn't get to see it, because the audience is like being conditioned to view her in the same way that the characters mainly seem to. But guess what, baby? It's like, she's very much still part of this. She's got contributions to make.
How old do we think Juanetta is? Because if Harlan is 85.
I love.
They say, I think, right?
No, they said.
They say they don't know.
Yeah, they don't know.
They say we have no idea.
We have no idea.
What is crazy, though, is that actress is younger than Christopher Plummer by like 6 days or something like that.
That's incredible.
She put her in 40 coats, so she looks smaller than she actually is.
Right.
Gave her some big glasses, some big coats. They said, that's fine. Take care of that.
Perfect.
This woman could be 100 years old. We don't know.
Gotta be over. Well, she doesn't have to be. She could have had him at 15.
Back in the day, that was very common.
You know, that could have happened. But I like the idea of her being like 110 and still trucking.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think they just did like great stuff with all the characters. Even Marta's mom and sister have some fun moments where in the beginning, Marta's sister is watching that like murder documentary and her mom is like, stop listening to this bloody murder thing. Like, her friend just had his throat slit. Like, she gets like into graphic details trying to make the sister stop, like goes so much harder than the movie was doing. But then you have that moment after where the sister's like, oops, like, okay, yeah, point taken. Like, sorry, I feel bad.
Whoopsies.
Oopsie. I don't know. I think it's like such a fun family moment. Like, it's so funny. And also, I don't know. I think you clearly can see that Marta cares a lot about her mom, because so much of her motivation is protecting her mom. But also, when the news people all start showing up outside their apartment, her sister says, are we rich? Not like, are you rich? Are we rich now? And so I think there's just like this implied, like, of course they're all gonna share. And like, of course they all help each other out. Like, it's not even a question in their minds that if one of them got rich, it would just be one of them. Like, of course they're a family unit. And they do that as a family, as opposed to the Thrombies, who are all these like individual little cockroaches scrambling for the best for themselves and only coming together as a collective when they have a common enemy.
Exactly.
Right.
Should we talk about segments now?
Yeah.
Is there anything else in the film we need to cover?
No, I think we'll probably catch it in our segment.
Okay, so how could this movie be gayer?
Meg's gay.
She's got her vagina shirt.
She's gay. She gives off a gay vibe.
I also, though, kind of think, like, this is bad for the culture that I'm going to say this, so I apologize in advance. I could see her being straight, but just, like, really wanting to be gay. You know what I mean? Just being like, yeah, like, totally, I would. Actually, Ricky Lindholm has a song that I always think about, because I'm always like, what's that about Ricky Lindholm? Where when they were not Garfunkel and Oates, they have that song about hooking up with a woman and it being wonderful until they're going down on a woman. And then they're like, ah, scary vagina. Do you know the one that I'm talking about?
Yes.
I feel like that would be big Meg vibes. where she would be like, yeah, like, I'm so pansexual and like women are so beautiful, but then
and she'll like make out with women but is yeah too but scared she to eat a pussy.
Her whole facade is that she's not really ready to commit to that lifestyle. She just has the appearances. That said, yeah, exactly. That said, I do think Toni Collette's character is a practicing bisexual.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And I think Marta could be gay.
That's true. I believe it.
Right? Like, that's why their friendship was, like, so genuinely, like, pure and, like, adorable and, like, all this kind of
intense
stuff.
A little bit. I think, who else could be gay in the family? I mean,
Ransom.
He's a bisexual.
Yes, he's a chaotic bisexual for sure.
Yeah.
Like, he takes one to know one, baby. And anybody that can pull off that cable net
is bisexual.
I feel like great grandma Juanetta, a lesbian, I've decided.
Oh, yeah.
We don't know how old she is. We don't know how old she was when she had Harlan. We don't know anything else about anything else. So I'm willing to just project my own ideas onto it. You know what I mean? That's a blank slate to me. And blank slate, lesbian. I will assign lesbian wherever I can.
Harlan could be a little fruity as well. He's got.
I bet he is. He's a mystery writer. Come on. You're telling me he never tried it.
Got a lushly decorated home. And it's filled with secrets and mystery. The real secret is his sexuality. He is a man.
Yeah, I mean, they never mentioned whoever the mom must have been for those kids.
So,
yeah, I definitely am willing. His house itself is camp, and I'm willing to believe that that's on purpose from his aesthetic preferences.
Yep. Linda is going to break up with her husband and do...
She's going to have her gay era after this?
She's already got the hair.
She's already got the power suits.
Yeah, she's got the hair and the power suits.
And you're ready.
Her and her dad communicate in invisible ink.
Yeah. That's gay. That's such a fun reveal.
Gay language. It's their secret closeted gay language.
Exactly. That's gay.
That's why Ransom is the only other member of the family who really understands Harlan, because they're the family queers.
Exactly.
Wow, we figured it out. We've solved it.
We've solved
the only blocks of their sexualities.
Yeah. Joni's the only one who went up and checked on Harlan also when she heard like a body hit the floor. So like that was her bisexual little bit jumping out to be like, oh, let me check in on the fellow LGBTQs of this household. Yeah,
other gays
are
in danger. We must
gays are danger.
I love this for them.
It's perfect.
Okay, so what's next?
Where would Matthew Lillard fit into this film? He could have been
he could have been Michael Shannon's character, Walt.
There. I would have hated to have to see him like that, but yeah.
You know what I mean? I think he would have done really well at that.
I think Daniel Craig is so fantastic in the role of Benoit Blanc, but if they were to do like a Rocky Horror Picture Show moment with a shadow cast performing in front of them, I would love to see Matthew Lillard doing his best Benoit Blanc. You know what I mean?
Yeah, if we were doing time travel Matthew Lillard, I would have late 90s Matthew Lillard be the giddy one of the two cops.
Ooh, that'd be fun.
But here's the thing too, also, like, if we did cast this in the 90s, he would have been a great Ransom.
Yeah, he would have. We know he looks great in a white sweater or a cream sweater.
Oh my god, so. To see Matthew Lillard.
So true.
Chelsea, I'm gonna need you to Photoshop Matthew
Little comparison
Lillard in a cable net ASAP.
He wears that white sweater in Scream.
Oh yeah.
Yeah,
wow. I need a side-by-side right now.
That said, again, if we're doing time traveling Matthew Lillard, I think, or just Matthew Lillard wants to wear a lot of prosthetics, I think he could be the groundskeeper too, who is there for, you know, 2 seconds, but Plays into the plot.
Cooper is also in Righteous Gemstone.
Oh.
A little bit, but he's in it.
Okay, I think we've got a lot of good options for him. I think he could take his pick. That said, there are also so many good options for who the dumb bitch of this movie is. Do you guys have any? Do you have any strong feelings about nominations, though, for who should win the Dumb Bitch Award?
I mean, like, this sounds maybe bad, but, like, I don't think it's not because he's too beautiful to be the dumb bitch, but Ransom was pretty smart.
He's like, too smart, yeah. Great. He's not the dumb bitch because he's a good thinker. He's a bitch for sure, but he's not dumb.
I think that Walt is definitely up there for dumb bitch because, like, his whole thing is like, I'm a self-starter, blah, blah, blah. But he's just, like, running his dad's business. Not that that's not hard, but he calls all the books, like, our books. So he's, like, taking responsibility for, like, all of his dad's hard work. And then he does the unforgivable. And he has he raised an alt-right child. That's another on him. And he thinks his alt-right child is cool and just good at the internet. And then that threatening scene, that's like the cherry on top. So that's my pick.
I think Richard could be the dumb bitch for cheating on Linda.
Don't fumble the bag. Like, you had it made, sir. Yeah. Right? Even if, like, they all got caught out of the will, if you hadn't cheated, you would have been fine.
Right? All cheaters are dumb bitches.
Damn. Messy. Messy.
Messy, messy, messy.
Also, a little bit, like, it's not, like, super dumb bitch, but if Harlan would have just let her call 911,
yeah,
he wouldn't have died. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, and I get doing all that kind of stuff, but, like, it's a, like, that's an easy, simple mistake, and, like, nothing would have, you know what I mean? Like, because, so that happened when, like, my grandpa in the hospital had a nurse. And she accidentally, like, gave him the wrong, like, medicine one time. And he went into, like, it, like, fucked him up. You know, but sure. They were able to do something. And I get the whole, they were like, we won't have enough time. But, like, if you waited, you would have. So, like, well, I also not the dumb bitch, but.
That we didn't have, right? He knew that her inheritance. The inheritance would go to her, and maybe he knows about that inheritance rule where, like, if you're the person who killed them, then maybe it was twofold. He's like,
he couldn't wait.
That might be too much to say, but he's a smart ass motherfucker. So,
oh no, he's the best.
Yeah, I think that makes total sense to say, like, he knows what would happen if she was found responsible. And so he knows, like, even if he thought they did have enough time, he's, like, not willing to risk it regardless. And they explicitly say, because he's going through that whole thing where he's like, 5 minutes for symptoms, 10 minutes to stone cold death in a country house like ours, it would take however many too many minutes for an ambulance to get here. Like, he explicitly lays out, like, that would not work, essentially. But it is sad. It is sad. I think I'm willing to. I mean, I think Jamie Lee's husband definitely deserves a nomination, but I think I got to give it to Walt on this one, because it really is annoying that he's like, I'm a self-made man, but all he wants to do is not even, like, help his dad write more books or come up with more ideas. He just wants to adapt the old ones. You know what I mean? Like, he, no original thoughts. He just is saying, let's repurpose what we've already got here.
Yeah. And he's a horrible bigot, so, you know.
But he's got a hot wife.
True that. Hope they all got. Anyway, that brings us to our knives out of fives. So bitches love this, right?
Bitches love this. On IMDb, it only has a 7.9 out of 10, which, you know, whatever. But on Rotten Tomatoes, this movie has 97% fresh from critics and 92% fresh from audiences. Like I said, it was nominated for an Oscar for Best Original Screenplay in 2020, and it was also nominated for 3 Golden Globes for Best Motion Picture Musical or Comedy, and then within that category, Best Performance by an Actress, Ana de Armas, and Best Performance by an Actor, Daniel Craig. So, like, very critically acclaimed as a film.
Okay.
Damn. Who wants to go first?
I will give this a 4.5 out of 5. I did have, here's the thing, I love a whodunit. I don't like it as much as Clue because it's not as camp.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I think they could have, here's the thing, I think they, if they would have made it a little bit shorter and focused more, like have like a little less family members and focused more on like the relations with all of them and gave me more like actual like whodunit a little bit, it would have been a 5 out of 5 for me. But I had a really good time. I thought it was like a nice, like modern, like retelling of kind of like a classic whodunit movie.
Yeah, I agree. I think they have a lot of fun playing with it and playing with the genre because they both do that thing where they give you what you think is the answer to that mystery so early on, and then they reveal that there's another mystery like later on where they're unraveling it again after the fact. And I think it can be really hard in movies like this to not just have a big monologue at the end, you know what I mean? Where it's like the person who figures it out explains it all along. But they do it in a really fun way here, kind of like how they do it in Clue, actually. But it's, I think they just, it's really creative. They do such a good job laying the groundwork for the way that the movie plays out. I bet it was really hard actually to put this movie together because it does seem like a lot was left on the cutting room floor, and so to make sure that like all the relevant bits stayed in but didn't stand out too much must have been a tricky process, I bet. And so for that, I'm willing to give the movie like a solid 5 knives out of 5 because it just seems like it was a really well constructed film. It's a lot of fun. I had a great time in the theater. I had fun watching it again this morning. I think they just, I'm like almost sad that in the sequel it's just Benoit Blanc and not like any of these characters popping up again, you know what I mean? Because I would love to see more of their family dynamic. I don't know that I want to watch a movie that's any longer than this one already is. But I would have loved to see more of them. And I mean, the sequel cast is like incredible as well. So I'm sure it's going to be an absolute bop. And I'm hearing already that it's an absolute bop.
Some people say it's even better than this, which I'm like, oh, so let's level our playing field and say it's not. It's definitely not better than this. But I've heard that. Oh, crazy.
But yeah, I mean, for me, I'm willing to give it 5 knives out of 5. So what about you, Monica?
Nice. I'm going to come in right under you. I'm going to 4.95, which sounds negligible, but there's something about me that just feels like
sure.
I don't want to give it a 5 right now. But yeah. You're right. It is like the perfect movie. I like how it doesn't even turn the whole thing on its head. It just brings it into the modern day. And I love the double twists that happen in it. And like, especially right in the beginning when you find out what's going to happen and you're like, there's an hour and 45 minutes left of this movie. You know what I mean? But it's so good. It's brilliant. Rian Rain Johnson really thought through every fucking little nook and cranny. You know, he thought through it all. And I love how many characters there are because it creates this air of chaos that I think is really important and powers the whole thing. Where you're trying to keep everything straight, you know, it's like that game at the when you're at a sports game. And they put the little ball under the cup and then they move all the like that.
Yeah.
What a movie. Wow. That was very sweet, Monica. Great job. That's the Tussin speaking. Anyway, 4.95 for me, and I'll leave it at that.
That said, next week we have a very exciting movie that we're doing.
This movie came out at the Venice Film Festival. This was my Super Bowl. I barely slept. I was on Twitter for 4 days straight. And then immediately the queen died right after. And it was an incredible high for me personally on the internet. And that movie is Don't Worry, Darling. And especially since Harry and Olivia have now broken up, we're going to have a great time talking about this next week.
The drama. It'd be like 50% movie talk, 50% goss talk, you know what I mean? And that's very...
It's one for the girls.
The girls, the gays, and the theys, baby. Let's go.
We need the guns.
We already talked about this movie for like an hour and a half on a post me watching it phone call. And we're willing to talk about it for maybe 2 more hours because there's a lot to be fucking said. Okay. So
that's the thing that's exciting to me is I had a very medium reaction when I watched this movie, and Monica had a very different reaction when you watched this movie. And so we talked about it a little, but I'm excited to rewatch it and like see where we're at on a second viewing. Do you come down? Do I go up? Like, we'll see.
I am excited to watch it for a second time and see how I feel about it.
When I come in with different expectations, the experience could be totally different.
Right.
Yeah.
And like versus watching it in a theater, it's like now on HBO. So it's going to be, I'm very excited to like watch it. And I want to know if the jump scare gets me this time still.
Yeah. And I mean, speaking of funny accents, we'll get into that next week.
We're all going to be, I'm going to be talking with a British accent all next episode. Be prepared.
I won't. Because I can't sustain an accent for a long period of time.
Mine will come in and out. It'll go. It'll ebb and flow. It'll be fine.
Just my like thing, the movie.
My thing that I'll do next week is probably hopefully have a normal voice. But who's to say?
At this Who point? Knows?
Best of luck to you.
Thank you so much. Why not, after having such a fun time with us for these last, several moments, give us 5 knives out of 5s yourself on Apple Podcasts in a 5-star review. You could do that for us right now, and we would get to 100 reviews like almost immediately. So just freaking do it, please. You could write a haiku. You could describe.
Just freaking do it.
You can do it. You know, we're so close. You don't even have to write anything. Just give us 5 stars. We're so close. This could be our Christmas present, our early Christmas present. This will cure me of my illness. Do it for my illness. Oh my God, I think
that's for her illness.
It's gonna work. That's gonna work for sure. And why not follow us on social media? We are at Spooky_Tuesday on TikTok, Instagram, and Twitter for now. We'll see how long that lasts. And then we are at Spooky Tuesday Pod on Facebook and Tumblr, and at Spooky Tuesday on Letterboxd. Thanks for listening.
Bye, Spookies.
Matter of fact,
God,
eat shit.
What?
How's that?
Shit. Please, do not use that word in front of my son.
Eat shit. Eat shit.
You entitled prick.
I would don't slap that smug smile.
Definitely eat shit. Eat shit. We can all eat shit.
I'm not eating one. I own it.
Spooky Tuesday was created by Monica Height, Sydney Thompson, and Chelsea Duff, and edited by Sydney Thompson. Our gorgeously spooky tunes are all thanks to Tamra Simons, who you can follow on Instagram at Captain Tamra, and our podcast art is by Mary Murphy, who you can find on Instagram at the_moon_OMG.